Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're Ocean City Positive right now. We're down here at Mako in the Ocean City Convention Center, the Fish Powell Hall. Remember when Fish Powell was the mayor down here? We have the Lucky Sevens Doublers. We have the Pressure Luck Maryland Lottery tickets to give away. We're going to have Raven Scratch off soon. I'm in the middle of our 27th anniversary, celebrating 27. My favorite things to eat. Some of them are actually in District 11 in Baltimore City. We'll get to that in a moment. Tasty things, absolutely, going on. We're down in Ocean City for a couple days doing a lot of good stuff, including getting together with people back at home. Zach Blanchard is the city councilman for District 11, which I paid taxes in for 19 years and 2 months. Gave that up about 3.5 years ago when I moved to the county. But since I left, Eric Costello left office. Zach Blanchard's taken over, and I think I had you on once in the running process. I've been in a room with you once or twice. You were doing all sorts of sort of Federal Hill, South Baltimore town halls and all that. That's, yeah, right? That's what, yeah, what it took to run. But this is your first Mako, right? Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. It was my first kind of political conference thing, right? So that's...
Well, what was your background? I mean, political science in school? What got you
running? I went to the Naval Academy for college. I was a Marine, active duty. Basically got out 2 years ago and then ran.
But you ain't from around here, right? Where are you from?
Louisiana.
Right. Yeah, I knew that about you.
Yeah, yeah. My wife's from Montgomery County. She went to college in North Carolina. We met when I was a midshipman. She moved to Baltimore after college. So that's how I...
You wound up in Baltimore because your wife
wound up. I kept asking the Marine Corps, like, hey, could y'all, like, put me in the same state as my wife? That'd be sweet.
And, why Baltimore?
Yeah, so I got stationed back in Annapolis as an instructor. And I'm a huge community social connectedness guy. We wanted to live in Rome neighborhood. We wanted to live, like, near people and be able to walk to stuff, like... So that was big. Obviously, Baltimore's
you
place for that
city,
type of thing.
Right.
Yeah, want to live in a city.
And where did you grow up in Louisiana?
Southwest. So not the city. Yeah, I mean, two of my mom's one, my dad's dad's first language was French. So
you could do the coon ass thing. You could do all that.
I can talk a little bit like that, but it's been so long since I've been, you know.
Brandon Stokely's from that part of the world. So
fun
back
fact.
When he played, he's a raging
Cajun. Yeah.
His dad was coach there, Norman.
Yeah.
So. And Stokes and I are still friends to this day. He's out in Colorado, and he comes on probably twice. He does sports radio in Colorado.
Nice.
He caught that first Super Bowl touchdown pass in 2001. But when he was young and I was young and he would come in the studio, he had the accent going on. He just brought it with him. And my favorite, of course, was Juston Wilson, the Cajun cook,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I guarantee,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
So when I think of that accent, that's where I come from. But you don't even, like... I would never place you in Louisiana, you know, never. I wouldn't get that.
Yeah, my wife says my accent comes out when I talk to my mom on the phone.
But
that's kind of the, yeah.
My wife's from New Hampshire, so about the third drink, all the R's go flying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
sounds like she's from Cape Cod.
Yeah, yeah,
but
that's funny.
But not normally usually. It's alcohol related. All right, so 11th District.
Yep.
I am intimately familiar with this.
Yep.
You know, I knew Eric well enough to, he was in my home and talked to him. I wouldn't say we were like friends, but I was thinking about running for mayor.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that point, 8 years ago, I talked to anybody that was in a political space.
Sure.
So, I mean, a couple times Eric and I met down at Cross Street or whatever, but
yeah.
I'm real familiar with the district and how incredibly diverse and challenged and how urban it is
yeah.
in regard to the harbor, in regard to all of those pieces just west of the harbor, Camden Yards. That's all you, dude, right? I mean, it's a big piece of a lot of residents
yeah,
in your
yeah.
council, right?
Yep, yep. Locust Point at the south, all of Federal Hill, you know, all of downtown, about half of Upton, half of Bolton Hill, half of Mount Vernon.
Is it the most populated councilmanic district? It might be.
Well, when they redistricted, we lost part of South Baltimore, Ridgely's Delight, and then parts of Upton and Bolton Hill. So it's not... They
I'm
redistricted
thinking about the density of the population.
Oh, density-wise, yeah.
Yeah, well, just
yeah.
like for being a small... You're thinking size-wise.
No, no, I mean
but like homes
geographically,
and heads and people.
Yeah,
I would think
the
there
densest.
Are more people in your district. Probably more. I should look at the voter register. I could see how many people voted. You know,
yeah.
but more people voted for you than voted for Felicia, let's say, or
sure,
any
sure.
of the rest of them because you just have more
yeah.
people in our district, right?
Right.
And our district goes up. Where we live, there are people that live on top of each other in big buildings
right.
where that doesn't exist in other places, right?
Yeah. They do. The districts are proportioned out by population. So it's they're roughly about the same.
Good to know.
But it, but it is density wise, right? Because it's downtown, because it's Mount Vernon,
just
because
of
the rural neighborhoods.
And a lot of important business, I would say. Not that every place in the city isn't important, but I think the phone could ring more often for you.
Yeah, it's definitely the best district. So if that's where you're getting, I totally agree with that.
Well, I live there, so I'd argue that. Why did you run, and what was important to you in regard to maybe things that were important to Eric before that, or just important to the mayor?
So I mean, I was super involved in neighborhood stuff, very big. Like, wanted my neighborhood to be a place that, you know, we would feel connected to the place. We could rely on our neighbors. Like, our kids will feel like this part of where you live is part of who you are. So I got involved in a whole bunch of neighborhood stuff. You know, had some real frustrations, some of them with some of Eric's decisions, would not decided to run. You know, all that's in the past now, of course. But, you know, that was important, motivating things. But, I do want to talk about, you asked, like, what are you working on and everything.
Sure.
I definitely want to take the chance to talk about the housing package today. I don't know if we'll have
Well, you're kind of new, right? I mean, you know, coming in, and the first big idea for you is that this is what you're putting forth for the citizens of the city and your councilman district.
So we have, if for folks who haven't heard, you know, I had the opportunity back in middle of May, along with the mayor, the council president, a couple other members of the council, to introduce some legislation called the Housing Options and Opportunities Package. There's five bills in the package. And the whole idea is we want to make it easier for people to live wherever they want in the city and be able to afford to live where they want in the city, whether that's near where you work or your kids go to school, right, all that type of stuff. The way I've been barnstorming the neighborhood association district, have a couple left, but have pretty gotten to almost all of them. And the way that I talk about it when I go to neighborhood associations, I give the handout and I say, look, when my wife and I moved next to Cross Street Market 6 years ago, we bought our house for $230,000, right? Same house today, about $300,000. You know,
good for you. I bought mine for $439,000 and sold it for $385,000.
Yeah, right. Well,
20 years later.
It's good. It's good from, you know, an owner, right? Like, you're making money off it, right? But if you think from the perspective of, like, hey, if we were moving in today, like, I don't know where we would live in the city, but we probably most certainly wouldn't have been able to buy, right, where we were thinking about living. And so that's not, you know, that's not good, right? So making homeownership attainable is incredibly important. Along with that, right, if you look over the last 5 years, the price of rent, average rent in the city, has gone up per month over somewhere over $200. Depends on what data sets you're using. But it's a very real spike in the cost of rent, and when you see that, so one, that's tough for everyone, right? Every cost of everything's
going up too. Yeah,
across energy, food, everything, right? But the cost of housing and rent in particular has shot up, right? And so that's tough for families everywhere. But then specifically, when you look at that's driving up our homeless population, which has increased really substantially in the last 5 years, because it makes sense if housing prices go up, then more people are no longer able to pay, right? And so, and people who are homeless, right, it's harder for them to get back into homes. And so, and that's a nationwide, very established, like, fact that when rent goes up, right, people lose their homes. And so you have increasing in homelessness. We obviously have the massive vacant housing crisis in the city that we've talked about a lot. And I think people are very aware of, right? That's an incredibly important thing for us to tackle. You have our population, right, the population loss that we've seen over the last 80 years, with a couple of small exceptions, like 2024. So you have, and then we have these high property tax rates, right? So you have all these massively important big problems. So, and I
well,
say,
they're all connected. We have less people.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, left fewer people to pay taxes, right? Like, you have all these challenges. And so what I say is, like, I've gone through that and I say, all right, hey, what if I had a package of legislation that effectively addressed all of these problems and it was free? We would do it for free. What people would say is, well, of course, that's not a real thing. You're a charlatan. Like, I don't believe you. If that was a thing, people would have done already. Wrong. Like, we haven't done it already, right? And so that's the bills in the housing package. The goals of them are to make home ownership more attainable, rent more affordable, reduce homelessness, reduce vacant housing, grow our population, and put us in a stronger position to reduce people's property taxes. I just think it's massively important. I'm so excited to be a co-sponsor of the package of the bills.
What does that mean, though? You said it does all these things. How does it do that?
How does it do it? Yeah, appreciate it. So there's several different things that are there's five bills in the package, four ones in particular. So my bill for example. All of it are things that make it easier to get more homes in the city on, like, the small scale for the most part, right? Not building large multifamilies, but, like, gentle density increases across the city. So, for example, my bill fully repeals the minimum parking requirements in the city. So we've had, for a long time, we've had different requirements over if you build this, you have to build this many parking spaces. If you build this, you have to build this many parking spaces, right? Now, we know that that makes it hard to build the types of things we want. So over the last 20 years or so, we've taken a bunch of bites out of the apple so that so many different exemptions for parking requirements in the city. But this is like a full repeal of that bill, right? Because we're prioritizing making it easy for people to have housing. Right. And that's these are real trade-offs that had to be had. Right. So there's some another bill that makes it easier to build slightly more property onto a parcel of land. Right. So like all of the row home neighborhoods, basically every row home in the city would be illegal per the current zoning code. And so we're making it easier to do that type of stuff again. Right. There's.
So in other words, you couldn't build row homes right now in the way that they were built.
Yeah, like the entire 11th district is illegal per the current zoning code because how much of the property has a building on it.
And there's not enough parking for it, correct?
Well, so actually you can build, in the current zoning code, you can build up to 3 residential units without requiring parking. But there was a point when that
didn't exist, right?
Right, yeah. So for probably 60 years or so, like, row homes were illegal from both a bulk and yard and a parking requirement perspective. Yeah, which is wild because we're a row home city, right? So it's like we made our whole city illegal.
Yeah, but we made row homes when we were horse and buggy, right? And then you had to put cars out, and you have a car, and your wife has a car, and they have a car, and their kid has a car. All of a sudden, I grew up in a row house. I lived in row houses long parts of my life in Dundalk, where it was maybe a little wider and more suburban, for lack. But I also, I've been down every tight street and.
Sure.
In your district.
Sure.
And one of the reasons my wife and I bought in Harbor Court is we weren't going to live in South Baltimore and fight to park every day of our
lives. That's right.
Like,
and you have the whole package is about giving people choices, right? Because the thing to remember, Nestor, is 30% of residents of homes in the city don't have a single car. 40% only have one car. So 70% of 70% of households in the city have either no car or one car. So why would you mandate that they have to spend another $170 a month per their rent on a parking space, or add another $20,000 to the cost of their house, right, for something that is not the most pressing thing that we have to deal with, right? So give people the options. And here's the cool thing about it, right? And I get it. Like, I look for parking too, and I don't love it, right? But the important thing to know from all the other cities, from Birmingham to Buffalo, that have done this, like common sense blue collar cities. I'm not just talking about the sort of like white collar high end cities with great transportation systems. Like regular blue collar cities who have worse transit than we have done this because what they've seen is that 80% of the parking that would have been built under the previous requirements are being built now, right? Because think about it. Like if you're building a 100-unit apartment building, like, you're going to want some parking because most of your tenants are probably going to want parking, right? And so, and you want to make money off that. And that's fine, right? The tenants want it. You're going to want it. But if you don't, but if only 80 of your tenants want parking, then why would you make it harder to build all that, right? And that drives up the cost for the tenants. That makes it harder to build, fit it within all the small lots that
it's
we have in the city.
It's more restrictive in a modern way. It doesn't need to be, right?
Like, build housing for people, let the market sort out the parking. And it's something that, like I've said, is like, this is not radical. This is like, literally, Birmingham, Alabama has had this on the books for like a decade. So Buffalo's had on the books for a decade, Birmingham a couple years. But the point is like, this is things that we've seen across the country, and it's getting the outcomes. People are, it's making housing more affordable, which is the big driving thing. It's allowing, making it easier to build things, helps with population, all that type of stuff.
How long have you been in Baltimore? When did you, like, physically arrive?
So,
you're really new.
Yeah.
So you weren't in Baltimore when the tanks came to town after Freddie Gray and took over the neighborhood.
I was a midshipman during Freddie Gray.
Okay.
So I was just south of there.
Yeah, but I lived at the harbor on the 23rd floor.
Yeah.
And I watched the tanks circle the city. I watched them play that baseball game that nobody was at.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, I walked down when there were guys with machine guns on every corner. You know, I saw that police state.
I think the president's trying to do that now.
I was going to get to that. So, like, I can't think if I live in D.C. to have that happen at a point where there wasn't a Freddie Gray. I mean, Freddie Gray was a serious thing. You know, like, I didn't question about the federales coming in at that point when there were riots going on down at Camden Yards, you know, in the middle of a baseball game. And I saw the fireballs in the sky, literally, from my place. But what's going on in D.C., from a military perspective, and I know Wes was pissed off about this the other day, just saying, look, I'm a military guy. You're calling me in to do something stupid. That doesn't...
Yeah.
That where are you on what this is and what military people could look to this sloth, felon, mafia creep and say, yes, sir. I mean, I cannot imagine it. I gave my life to the military. I mean, I got a father-in-law turning 80 that fought in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I can't fathom... I mean, as a citizen, I'm pissed. But if the military's being misused by the military's leader, that should be unacceptable to every American.
So the important thing here, and what we're what's being been proposed by President Trump is a...
Don't call him a president, please, not here.
Well, that's what he is, right? The point is, the president can federalize the National Guard constitutionally, right? And as a military member, whether you're in the regular armed services or in the National Guard... Like, you swear an oath to the Constitution, right? That is you don't swear an oath to a leader. This isn't, you know, this is Nazi Germany, then some kingdom or whatever. You're not swearing an oath to religion. You're not swearing any of that, right? You swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, right? And so...
domestic.
Which is an extreme... Yeah, domestic. No, that's a... That is an...
If the president's a threat, he's domestic.
Well, The point being, right, is that your oath is to the Constitution. And so if the president, you mentioned Vietnam, right? Like, an example of probably a war we shouldn't have fought. But it was constitutionally executed, right? And so it's the obligation of the service members to do their duty. On the political side, that's our jobs to fight these types of bad things from happening, right? And it's of the citizenry of all that, right? As a service member, your job, that's why people thank you for your service, is because you're swearing an oath to support and defend the Constitution. So what he has proposed for Baltimore is constitutional. I think it's a terrible idea, and I hope it doesn't happen.
But you don't think it's unlawful?
No, I mean, there's actually a direct, like, Title 10 powers to do that, so...
Without unwarranted, just because he feels like it. I mean, that really is the issue,
right? Well,
there's not another human being in the world that would look at D.C. and say we didn't send the federal troops in there, including any of the citizens.
Well, mostly the citizens, right?
Yeah,
of D.C. Like you're
they also don't have a state; they don't have representation. Like the license plate says.
Like, I just want to make super clear: I am in no ways like advocating for this. What I'm saying is, like, you're talking about what service members have an obligation to do, support the Constitution, and it's not to be not to come up with some, like, legal theory of how things can be interpreted as whatever, right? And so the problem is not with service members. The problem is with the
leadership.
President.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
Well, and I think it speaks also to the difference between being a sworn-in military member and being a thug with a mask and an ice badge, right? I mean, you know, there's a different level of accountability that we've just... I'm Hispanic, man. I'm Venezuelan. You know, my people are being thrown in cages.
Yeah.
I don't dig that at all. Not even a little bit. So I've been outspoken about it, but I don't know as a citizen what you can do other than vote, pay your taxes, all that. But what I try to do is educate people better through my medium, because the things I hear from the cult followers on that side of things... It boggles my mind. It really does on a daily basis.
Let me give you my sense of what we need to do on the immigration fight. Like, if you keep the heat up, right, like what they're doing, what the Trump administration is doing is things that when people understand what's going on, like they're deporting kids out of high schools, right? Like, people are scared to go to work. They're scared to go to church. Like, you're ripping families apart. Like, this, you're saying this stuff about, like, oh, I'm going to you know, we're getting rid of all the criminals or whatever, and you see what you're actually doing, and you say, oh, well, you know, they were here illegally, so it's like, no, this is bogus. Like, it is bogus. It is bogus in the way that a regular American, when they see it, they know it's bogus. And so the way this is a democracy, we have to win power through elections, and the important way is that as, like, people who have an opportunity, have a platform like you or I do, like, or like the activists who are like leading and like standing out on corners and like raising.
I went to Patterson like Park for the New Kings.
Not just, I'm talking about like what Casa has been, the great work they've been doing to like keep the heat up on like, we have to keep it in people's faces, like to be angry about this, right? Like people can't just, and when regular Americans like see this stuff, they're going to be turned off by, and they already are. Like we see what's, and it's going to get worse. It's the same thing that happened with him first term, right? Like he had the whole kids in cages thing. Like, that made people recognize, like, the human scale of what that administration was doing then. And it's worse now, right? And so it's going to get – we have to make sure that regular Americans see how inhumane is the right – I think the most specific – these are humans being treated like animals, right? And
– by a Christian nation.
I mean
– yeah.
You know, whatever. Whatever they want to call themselves, whatever they want to frame their religious beliefs to be on that side of the house. So that's
not
my,
the way
my
I
point.
Was taught as a Christian as a kid, but you know that for me.
It's tough. I don't know how to interpret.
Well,
how
just
to
on
interpret
a daily basis, the Epstein thing that sits behind it for me is also everything's a distraction.
Yeah.
From a guy who's a criminal, so I don't. You know. That being said, our city. Better run than it's been run, and all the stuff that he's talked about in regard to usurping the Baltimores and the Chicagos and all of that, crime's down in our city, right? I mean, and all of you should be crowing about that, right? I know Brandon is as well, but that is a reality. The reality is, if you're going into the city right now, it is safer than it's been, and that's all I can ask of any of you who try to help with public safety and around on the front lines.
And to totally get away from, like, the Trump conversation around this and just talk like public safety in the city, right? Like there is like statistical, like the crimes that are happening, and then there's like perceived sense of safety and like just sort of like having like healthy neighborhoods and all that type of stuff. Like there's plenty of work that needs to be continue to be done, right? On there's a difference between crime moving in the right direction and this being like an area we're accepting, right? But the fact is, to your point, it is moving in the right direction, and it has been for the last 2 years, 3 years for homicides and shootings. There's reason to be optimistic, and there's still so much work to be done. So,
what's the most important thing for the city right now, other than your bill?
Package of bills.
And your package of bills are about housing, primarily.
Housing. Well, they're all focused on housing, whatever they do. Like, that's the goal, is we want more homes in the city, right? And we want, So that's a good question.
I think focused on housing.
I think that outside of the housing package as a whole, I think that tackling the vacant housing crisis, what we have, like, if we tackled that. And the like
is tackling it, rehabbing them, or destroying them in your mind?
I mean, ideally they'd all be rehabbed, right? Like I want a city full of row home neighborhoods, right?
Right.
Like,
and but not ones with lead paint or asbestos, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
there's a lot of
they
old
should, and they need roofs and AC and things like that too,
sure.
Right? Right. But like, yeah, not all of them are gonna be salvageable, and I think we know that. I think that. With the impact on both the neighborhoods that have a high concentration of vacants and the $200 million we lose from having the vacancy crisis, and the way that kneecaps us as a city from being able to do important stuff for our citizenry, like that's something. I mean, that was like my number one listed priority on the campaign trail. I think that is like citywide.
Odette will be here tomorrow talking about it too. She's always talking.
Yeah. And she's such a, yeah. ask her who, which of her colleagues ask her the most questions about this. I'd be curious. It's probably me. I bug her a ton about it, and I have so much respect for what she's doing.
Conway came by. He talked about being in Guilford and at a community meeting at a school and couldn't drink the water because the water had lead in it. And I'm like, You know, yeah. It's one of the reasons he ran, he said. So, I mean, I think all of you identify these problems, and including me when I was going to run, to say I want to make it better. I'm a citizen who wants to make it better.
Hey, can I plug, speaking of Councilman Ramos, I just want to plug something I'm sure she'll talk about tomorrow. She's introducing legislation on Monday. I am super excited to be co-sponsoring it. I've been helping out a little bit on it. We had the vacant building tax that the council at the very end of last term was able to pass, which said that you have a blighted building, you are now going to pay more in property taxes for it, right? We are about to introduce legislation on Monday to do the same thing for vacant lots, because you have these vacant lots who just sit there for forever, right? Could be holes in the ground, like what we have in the Mechanics Theater site. Could be just, you know, grass growing over them, like all these things that we across the city. They pay nothing in property taxes. So having
cheaper
a way
for them to keep it an eyesore.
Yeah, which is a it's the private interest is totally at odds with like the public good here. And so we're trying to shift that. I think that's, and what's nice is like, you don't have to put extra work in. Like once you get it passed, like the market will fix it. Right. And so it'll help things move
we're
in the right direction.
We're also going to piss off the people that own the land, but they should, you know, they, come on, dude. I'm running up. If you're not doing anything with this land in the middle of the mechanic being, I mean, that's the greatest example you could possibly get.
And they should pay more. They should pay more in property taxes to incentivize them to do something productive.
Well, I mean, how does it hurt the Lord Baltimore? How does it hurt the
all
it hurts
of downtown
CFG? It hurts everything.
And I won't miss you. Like, well, some people be pissed off. Like, look, like I didn't run for office to not piss anybody off, right? Like, and so it's just like if your property is hurting your neighbors or the city or the neighborhood or the city,
whether
right?
Whether it's
like,
rats or ice or not shoveling or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like within limits, right? But like, particularly when it comes to these like large scale blight type things, like we have to change the incentives so that the property owners are working in the best sense of everyone. So
forward, not backward.
100%.
All right, Zach Blanchard is here. He runs the 11th district as the councilman in Baltimore City. My former district, I guess. You know, I was going to say our district. You know, like I was going to call it ours and mine.
I wouldn't check you on it.
I lost enough money in your district owning my place to feel still invested.
Yeah.
I'm invested whether I want to be.
There you go.
Hey, look, I spent the best years of my life there. My wife and I would tell you we loved living in the city. We miss living in the city in the walking around kind of way. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back and walking the mean streets of the 11th district and going north to south and walking over to Patterson Park and walking down to, you know, even just down to Ford Avenue. You know, I got friends that live in that neighborhood. I mean, walking the city was a joy to me. When you live in a county, you don't walk anywhere.
Yeah. Well, you can't.
I mean, I'm getting old, but I'm not getting fat. But, I mean, tell you, man, I mean, walking in the city kept me young. And I, a lot of times I go back to the city and I will intentionally park blocks away from where I'm going just to, like, get a walk in, you know. But, I mean, I'm in a city. Our veterinarian is in the 11th District. Hi, Jill, at City Pets. So right down the street from you, two blocks from you probably, So I'm in the city 3-4 days a week, and I appreciate you. Somebody's got to run the 11th. I'm glad you're there.
I appreciate you, Nestor.
Louisiana, I'm going to work on your accent when you bring you back.
You
have a Baltimore accent yet? You have nothing you can do? You try that.
I would not. I would make some people very disappointed in me if I tried it. So I'm gonna pass on that one.
I keep threatening to do like a whole week or a month in my Baltimore accent just to do it.
Yeah.
I pour it on from time to time when it happens.
Yeah.
But
I feel you.
Some people say I never run away from it anyway. My appreciation is Zach. Everybody that's been here. We're in Ocean City, Maryland. We are at Mako. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Curio Wellness, as well as GBMC. Putting our 27th anniversary on, we're doing 27 of my favorite things to eat. I'm trying to think how many of them are in the 11th. Two. So there you go. You'll find out.
Heck yeah.
They're still on the list. Pressure Luck giveaways, as well as the Lucky 7 Doublers. We begin in your district. We're going to be in Fadley's on Thursday at Lexington Market. We are also going to be on Friday moving the show back to Essex and Pizza John's. We're going to be on Monday, the 25th, at Costas and Timonium. Tuesday, we will be back downtown, not your district, but the east side. We're going to be at Solancha over in Fells Point. And then we are going to be on the final day at Coco's. Maybe I get Ryan out for that, finally. We'll be over in Lauraville on Wednesday, the 27th. It has been quite a journey, 27 years of doing this thing here at WNST. We're back for more in Ocean City at Mako. Stay with us. We're Baltimore Positive.